Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 79. Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, a little programming note. Stan Saverin is going on vacation tomorrow, Wednesday, February 22nd, and I will be sitting in for him on ESPN 970 in Pittsburgh. 10 to noon, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the following Monday. So happy Fat Tuesday, or I guess happy Mardi Gras Day today. And a little programming note, and we've already scheduled it. You'll be on the show tomorrow, Wednesday at 11:30, and we'll talk a lot of things. We'll touch on some of the things we're touching on today, but we'll certainly get into the combine a fair bit as well.
Yeah, happy Fat Tuesday to you as well. You know they take that crap serious down here with Mardi Gras parades and all that kind of stuff they got going on. And, boy, I've been to New Orleans and all during the, you know, in the heat of all that and all, and it gets crazy. And I'm much happier right now hidden off from the world behind my desk with a belly full of Xanax, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hey, make sure everybody knows, too, I believe on the ESPN, I think they have that app that I love.
iHeartRadio, right.
iHeartRadio app.
Because of the setup of the channels in Pittsburgh and because 970 changed its affiliation, 970 ESPN is found on the iHeartRadio app, not on the ESPN app. So if you're looking around and you want to listen because you're not near a radio, or you're outside of Pittsburgh, it's iHeartRadio 970 ESPN Pittsburgh. So yep, noon 10 to noon the next four business days.
And we'll tweet that link out so people can listen live as well too. Make sure you call in and give David some good calls on the show too, because I know not only he'll be talking Steelers and all, he'll be talking Pens and Pirates as well too. So make sure you hit him up there and listen to the show.
Yeah, we might even get a little NBA in there, a little Jeremy Lin sanity as they take on the Heat on Thursday. So that'll be a topic of conversation, both a little bit Thursday and Friday. Not a big topic in Pittsburgh, but something I like to get into now and then, and this gives me a reason to do it. So we'll span the globe, as Wide World of Sports used to say, and the spectrum of sports. But let's get into what we talk about, and that's the Steelers. And a little bit of breaking news this morning. We're going to see this stuff. As we said, this offseason has been anything but an offseason, certainly for Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert. A lot of work to do to get under the cap. It's not something I don't think is going to happen. Of course, it's going to happen because it has to happen. But this is something that these guys have been thinking about, I'm sure, every day for the past 4 months. They've got decisions to make. They're not always going to be easy decisions, but they continue in the process. And today it was announced that Willie Colon restructured. Why don't you take us through what went on there, Dave?
Yeah, let's start with yesterday. Willie Colon had tweeted out that, I kind of had a funny post about him. He was going to be next up on the Meet Todd Haley game show, because he tweeted out yesterday that he was going in and he would be meeting Todd Haley today. Well, we found out the real reason probably why he was at the Steelers facility, and that was to restructure his contract to sign off on that. Ed Bouchette from the Pittsburgh Post Gazette tweeted that out this morning. What Colon did is he took what the Steelers did with Colon is they took basically three let's see what was it exactly 3.8 million of his 4.5 million base salary that he was scheduled to earn in 2012. They turned that into a signing bonus. That's not a pay cut. They basically cut him a check for $3.8 million. They lowered his base salary down to $700,000 in 2012. That $3.8 million is prorated out over the remaining 4 years left on his contract as far as salary cap accounting goes. So do not confuse this with a pay cut. This was a straight restructure. I know there was a report earlier or late last week by Jason LaCampora that stated that Willie Colon was not willing to take a pay cut, And really, I mean, you can't blame the guy. We covered that the other day as well, too, kind of why he shouldn't. Well, you know, it was hard to imagine that the Steelers would even go to him, ask him to take a pay cut. But he has done a restructure. What that does is that lowers his scheduled cap hit was scheduled to be $5.7 million. That has dropped that exactly in half down to $2.85 million in 2012. So they saved $2.85 million with that basic restructure. Now, when you stack that on top of the restructures already done to Lamar Woodley, Lawrence Timmons, Ike Taylor, the release, the contract terminations of Arnez Battle, and Bryant McFadden, they have trimmed already about, you know, basically about $21, $22 million off of this cap.
Dave, now, let's go through that. Let's go through that list again, because that's an all-inclusive list. So the point is, I want to just say it again so we can talk about who we got left up on the chopping block.
Okay, well, basically those who have restructured are Lawrence Timmons, Lamar Woodley, Ike Taylor, and Willie Colon now. Now, there's reports out there that Ben Roethlisberger and James Harrison are willing to restructure, and I expect those will happen. So, you know, Roethlisberger almost certainly will, and I could see Harrison getting done too, but none of that's been confirmed as actual restructures with those two. So you have those four players that I mentioned that have restructured. Of course, you have the deletions of McFadden and Arnez Battle on top of it. Now, everybody's scurrying around right now off of several reports of saying, well, how much further do the Steelers have to go salary cap wise? Are they $8 million over? Are they $7 million over? Here's the thing that you have laying out here, and I tweeted this out this morning, David, is you still do not have any tenders made to any of the restricted free agents, okay? So, or your exclusive rights free agents either. Now, those will get done at some point, assuming that everybody except Jamon Meredith gets the restricted free agents gets tendered a contract. So that number could be from anywhere from $9.042 million to $15.7 million worth of tenders that are out there. And those, once those things are tendered, those things automatically count against your rule of 51 number, okay? And to reiterate what the rule of 51 number is, it's your top 51 salary cap hits on your roster, plus it includes any dead money that you have cap-wise, plus it includes anybody else that their salaries are not included in the top 51, but they have a signing bonus or whatnot attached to it, okay? So basically, I have projected out the rule of 51, and this is assuming that Mike Wallace gets tendered at only a first-round level.
Well, Dave, let's just clear up the one thing about these tenders, the guys we're talking about, the couple guys, they have to be tendered before the March free agency deadline, right?
Right. I think they have to be tendered before March 4th or 5th. I think that's right. The date on that. Right. So, and these, the players that I'm talking about that are restricted, of course, are Mike Wallace, Ramon Foster, David Johnson, Doug Legursky, Keenan Lewis, Ryan Monday. Your exclusive rights free agents are Jeremy Kapanos, Steve McLennan, and Isaac Redman. All those guys I fully expect to get tendered, okay? The only person that will be above a minimum will be Mike Wallace. Now, the question is, will it be the first-round tender of 2.742, or will it be the franchise tag of $9.4 million? So you can see the swing there. Now, I have projected out the rule of 51 based on all the future contract players that are scheduled to kick in, of all those 19 or so futures contract players that we've signed since the end of the season. And I've also factored in these tenders with Wallace at a first-round tender level. That gives me a rule of 51 number when you add in the dead money of $135 million, roughly, just slightly over $135 million. Now, if we're using $125 million as a basically a salary cap number, which, you know, I think it's going to end up, you know, with your credits and all like that, that's roughly a good number to work with. So you've still got $10 to $11 million worth of, ways to go to get basically underneath the cap. And, you know, some of that's going to come in a restructure of Roethlisberger. Some of it's going to come in a restructure of Harrison, and there's still going to be some deletions, contract termination as well.
And so, just the obvious question, Dave, is if the Steelers move with Aaron Smith and Hines Ward, how much will that get them?
Yeah, basically with Aaron Smith, you're going to save, $2.1 million there. Now, you got to figure in a replacement cost when you release yep. somebody right there, somebody's got to replace them into 51.
In the 51, right?
Right. So let's just use the raw numbers, okay? $2.1 million there, and let's say $4 million with Hines Ward. That's $6.1 million. Let's take away about $800,000 in replacement costs there. So now you're down to, what did I say, 6.1 minus, say, $800,000.
Let's just round it up and make it 5.5 off of that. So it means the Steelers have 5.5 to go if they were to release those two guys.
Exactly. And when you throw in, the possibility of somebody like Chris Kimoatu, with him, if he does not take a pay cut, releasing him straight out will save $3.57. Roughly minus replacement costs and all on top of it there. So
and if Ferrier or Foot goes, then you might actually be under.
Right, you've got Foot with a $3 million you can save out there, and there you go. And that's not even touching the contract of Casey Hampton either. So
right, and this is look. I talked about this on Tuesday. We've talked about it. You talked about this is work and it's real stuff. And I don't mean to downplay this at all, but I don't think it's going to be – I don't think the Steelers have any doubt. Well, I know they have no doubt they're going to get under the number because it's – that's part of the bylaws of the league. But I just don't see this as being as dramatic a thing as, guys have made it out. Now, obviously, look, if the issue here is if you throw another $7 or $6 million on Mike Wallace because you decide to franchise him, you may have something different that comes as you're working around the number, around the date of the free agency date. But again, you've talked about, we've talked extensively about whether you give him the exclusive rights deal and somebody can match it. And then are they going to match it at a number where it's $9 million up front in that first year? How are they going to do it with signing bonus? So it's one of those things where it's a little bit of game of chicken if the Steelers decide not to franchise him and what they go with. But I got to imagine that they have, they've looked at all the different possibilities. And, this would be one of the more interesting and enjoyable things to watch about this is to see how kind of NFL front offices are approaching this.
Yeah, and you hit on it. The biggest unknown right now is the money that we're going to have to at least initially dedicate to him with either a first-round restricted tender or a franchise tag. So, you hit on it. They've got to get underneath the cap. There's no two ways around that. It's just a matter of how much more do they have to go with the difference of the first round tender and the franchise tag. Now, of course, and we hit on this, and I advise everybody, we went into the Mike Wallace situation. We really dove into that in the last podcast. So if you have not heard that, we really, really dove into that. So that's the difference right there of how much more they have to go in the salary cap wise is whether or not you're placing this first round tender on him or the franchise tag of $9.4 million on him.
Yeah. So this is Dave. This is excellent stuff. And I for those who want to hear it again, Dave and I are going to go over this again on the Saverin Show, as I said, tomorrow at 11:30, because this is the stuff that's going to determine how the Steelers approach free agency. Certainly, we've seen that trades in the NFL really aren't things that happen anymore. It's then going to construct their draft board in terms of what they're thinking about, where their needs are greater. We talk all the time about the Steelers taking the best athlete available, but it is the best athlete available within context of some needs-based idea of what you're doing. And we've certainly seen that the past 2 years as they've gone defensive linemen with the first pick. And it's certainly not out of the question that they go that way again. But we'll see what happens with with Ferrier and Foote. We'll see what happens with Aaron Smith and Hines Ward. I've said all along I just would be absolutely shocked if Aaron Smith's back. I'll be equally shocked if Hines Ward makes the team. But the Steelers, if they restructure his contract and move him from $4 million to the kind of $1 million level, well, then maybe that's something they at least, as some guys in the media have suggested, they give him the opportunity to come to camp and try and win a job. And it really would alleviate much of the burden of his $4 million number. And so that number that we talked about goes from 5.5 to 6.5, but it certainly takes $3 million more off the books. And you know, Hines has expressed an interest in willing to do that. So one way or the other, his number is going to come down from $4 million over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Exactly. And when you add in, you know, the portion of prorated, I mean, he's scheduled to be about 4.6 something million as far as the salary cap hit. So, you know, the longer he stays on the roster right now, you would think, at least I would think, that, you know, they're close to making that decision. Now, Kevin Colbert has said that this week they were going to be in a lot of meetings and all leading up to the combine. I'm willing to bet right now that they have a good idea what's going to happen with Hines Ward. And to me, the longer he stays on the roster like this, the more it signifies that something's going to be worked out for him to stay. Now, that's not 100% guaranteed. That's 100% speculation. But you would think, they would at least give him the courtesy of releasing him early if he was not in the plans.
Well, I've kind of been on the other side of that. And I've said, look, it doesn't matter if it's today or it's 2 weeks from now. He's not other teams can certainly sign him. We saw it happen with the cornerback from Oakland who just signed yesterday, Root, who signed with Kansas City, which probably means Brandon Carr now hits the market and probably doesn't stay with Kansas City. But I don't know that teams are going to be looking to make a move early with Hines Ward here, since he's not going to be a number one, two, or probably even a number three guy. And so I don't think teams are going to be looking to sign him. But I certainly think you want to make a decision kind of mid-March whether you're going to bring him to camp or not. So I think, you know, at that point, yeah, when it's unrestricted free agency for all the guys who currently aren't yet free agents, I think you want to do something by then. But I don't really see any kind of immediacy to do something between now and then.
Well, you definitely have to do something between now and, middle of March when you have to get up underneath the cap.
So. You're going to change his contract. But so at that point, yes, that's all I'm saying is you want to, between now and then, I don't think it makes any difference. And then you decide, are you going to bring him to camp at $1 million and let him win a job, or are you going to, let him go? And so, I just think that's going to happen over the next month, and whether it happens, tomorrow or 2 weeks from now, I don't think that's going to impact Hines Ward's the future of his career with somebody else.
With Chris Kimuatu, let's look at guys like Kimuatu and Jonathan Scott. I know we've hit on them before, though, but, there's absolutely no way you can carry Chris Kimuatu at a 5.22 cap number this year. And in my opinion, you cannot carry Jonathan Scott at a 2 point, what is he at? He's at a 2.7 cap hit this year.
This goes right to the point of, as we get into actually now the personnel with the Cologne restructure, we now know that the Steelers are planning their depth chart in ink right now for the opening day. Assuming everybody's healthy, is Willie Colon at right tackle, Marcus Gilbert at left tackle, and Marquise Pouncey at center. That's a done deal. Those three spots are now solidified and aligned. With that move today, it means, it guarantees that Gilbert's going to move over to the left side. So you now know who your tackles are and your center, and now you're going to make decisions here. And you've got, Ramon Foster at a pretty low number. You've obviously got Ligurski, who I think you would like to have him be your swing interior guy as a backup. And, the question is, when you demoted Chris Kimuatu in week 13 or 14 or whatever it was, and that number is he going to make the team? I mean, there are guys who will tell you who watch practice every day that Kimuatu might be the most talented lineman the Steelers have. And if that's the case, then he also qualifies as the dumbest lineman the Steelers have. Can you have that guy continue to be on the roster?
Not at that number. I would love to have Chris Kimuatu back as somebody for depth purposes. or even, you know, opening the year as your starting left guard until hopefully, you know, one of these guards are drafted, you know, next month or early in the, or in April, early in the draft is ready to take over. And, you know, the get ready time for a young draft pick on offensive lineman is a lot shorter than it is for, say, somebody on the defense for the Steelers. You know, when you factor in the 3-4 and everything that's involved there, linemen can get up to speed a lot quicker. So I'm just not ready to say that Kim Oatu needs to be back, you know, on that. You know, he's got a 3.577 base salary. And like I said, a cap hit of 5.262 almost. So something's going to be done there. I just cannot see him letting him ride on that current number.
And Dave, we got an email today. In fact, we got it here while we're doing the show, and it's good stuff. It plays right into what we're talking about, and I think this is really relevant. And I know the answer. I'll read it to you, and we can talk about it, because the answer isn't – there's not a definitive answer to the question, but it's from Kyle Kitzmiller, and he's talking about – why guys restructure and the signing bonus goes into the players' pockets. He says he understands that, but what he doesn't understand is why deals when they're originally made aren't made so that happens originally and you don't come into the cap problems that you have now. And then he follows that up with, how is a cap hit calculated with signing bonus and salary? What's the formula and what's the stuff for dead money? So let me throw the first part at you and say, you know, when you sign Ben to a deal the way the Steelers signed it to an 8-year deal about 4 years ago, whenever it was, and they structure it that way, you and I know that they do it that way. The agent and the team come to agreement knowing that the player is going to get a certain amount of money guaranteed up front in that signing bonus. And then a lot of times the back end of the contract is just seen as a formality because the player may or may not be on the roster, but it allows them, when they're giving that signing bonus money up front, to prorate that bonus over the length of the contract.
Right. Let's basically take, you know, break it down this way. Players have a minimum base salary that they can earn on any contract, okay? So that's your starting point, and that bumps up each year in the new CBA, and there's also you know, the 30% rule, which I don't want to get too much. I mean, that'll really blow your mind when you get into that. So you have to, the first part of your contract that you're structuring out is your base salary increments. Now, they're not always all the base salary because it depends on the value of the contract. The second is what's called the signing bonus, okay? People confuse guaranteed money with signing bonus, okay? Signing bonus is the actual signing bonus. It's just what it states. If somebody is given a $10 million signing bonus on a 5-year contract, the way that's accounted for, now that player gets that $10 million check right off the top, okay, because that's his signing bonus. That's accounted for, that's broken up equally over, let's say it's a 5-year contract, over a 5-year deal. You cannot extend it out over 5 years. You can only, even if you signed a guy to 7 years, the most you can prorate out that signing bonus is for 5 years. So in this case, with a $10 million signing bonus, that would be $2 million added on to the salary cap each year for that player, even though he's already been paid that. In the Steelers' case, a lot of times they'd like to alleviate some of the pressure in the first year hit of the contract or whatnot, that they will oftentimes include roster bonuses throughout the contract. We saw this with Lawrence Timmons and Lamar Woodley's new contracts last year. That, you know, that they're that's not guaranteed money if they're not on the roster, but odds are that's going to be there for them. And what the Steelers did with that money, of course, this year is they rolled that over into a partial of the base salary and turned it into signing bonus as well, so they could stretch it out even farther as well. So I guess his question is what's the how is the cap hit calculated? Well, the cap hit for each year is based on whatever that player's base salary is scheduled to be for that year, plus whatever proration of any signing bonuses is added on to that. So
right, then that's pretty straightforward, and that's the important thing, as you said, is the five-year window. For most players, that's not an issue, but obviously for somebody like Ben who signs an eight-year deal, you've got to just do it over five. So that's why you see when the numbers, the salary numbers, and if you're thinking about the signing bonus, you know, that's generally how you would get to that number, and that's pretty straightforward. That's actually probably the most straightforward thing about the whole salary structure concept.
The second part of the question that Kyle had was related to the, how the dead money is calculated. Now, remember I said that you have a $2 million each year on a $10 million signing bonus that's been prorated out as far as signing bonus goes. Now, when you terminate a contract of a player, let's say it's before June 1st, all that proration that's spread out for the years comes due on your salary cap right then. So let's say on a five-year contract, the player and had the $10 million spread out over the 5 years, it's $2 million each year. Let's say he plays only 1 year for you, okay? So that's $2 million already accounted for and off the books as far as the signing bonus proration goes. That leaves $8 million out there in proration. If you cut that player before June 1st, all of that debt, all of that remaining proration escalates into that current year. So that means now you have cut a player and he is going to hit the cap at $8 million, basically in that year. Now, why you hear the June 1st date is so important, because if a player is cut after June the 1st, whatever his scheduled proration was to be that year still counts, and you can put off the rest of it to the second year. So in the example with our $10 million five-year contract of cutting the player after year one, if you wait until after June 1st, you have that second $2 million that only hits your cap that year. The other remaining, then, it would be $6 million, would then be due on the next year as a dead money hit. So that's how your dead money is calculated there. It's basically leftover proration of signing bonus money.
All right. That is some excellent stuff. And, again, we'll be hitting this again on Stan Savran's show tomorrow around 11:30. If you want to actually call in and get some questions or send them to us, here we can address those again tomorrow, but I think a really good job of laying that out there, Dave. And I think as we go forward here for the Steelers, obviously as we get to this date in mid-March, we're going to have the rule of 51 is going to be in effect. We'll know the cap number exactly and where the Steelers are at $125 million. But you know, the thing that I guess that puzzles me about a little bit of the Pittsburgh beat guys, but I think they have a better handle on it, but more of the national media guys is, you know, they're panicked about this number, but, you know, and talking about, you know, things the Steelers are going to have to do, but there are obvious moves, the Aaron Smith move, the Hines Ward move, one of the inside linebackers seems to be a very likely candidate. And then who knows, as you said, what they do with Casey Hampton, Chris Kimoatu, and Jonathan Scott. I mean, these are guys, you know, if you were to lose all these guys in one fell swoop, sure, that would impact the Steelers and the performance going forward and how things go. But look, this team is going to get younger. The Steelers knew this past offseason. They made the decision to keep these guys and knowing that a lot of these guys weren't going to be around another year. So, again, this isn't catching anybody in the Steeler organization by surprise. I'm pretty sure, as you said, they've got it mapped out as to where they're going to go. Maybe not exactly how some of the restructurings are going to go, but it just seems to me they've got one bit of a wild card, and unfortunately it's a big number wild card. It's $6 or $7 million about exactly how you're going to handle the Mike Wallace situation. But the rest of it seems relatively straightforward and actually not even that draconian to me.
Exactly. And you know, there's already people starting to worry about Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. You know, with this being fresh in our face with the Wallace situation, people are automatically jumping ahead to the end of next season as far as Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders go. And even though they're pushing some of this money forward right now with these restructures, you know, there's still some cuts to be coming, and the salary cap situation does not look as bad as it did heading into this season. So, you know, I kind of broke this down in a post, David, that I put up early this morning as far as Brown and Sanders go. First of all, everybody's freaking about about Sanders. This is a guy that has partial playing time in 2 seasons thus far, and he has 50 career regular season catches and 664 yards, and everybody's worried about if we're able to put a first round tender or a franchise tag on him. You know, let's have this guy put up a 1,000-yard season first, and then come talk to me whether or not he's worth a first round tender or if he's a risk losing by only putting original round tender on him, which realistically right now it's shaping up to be an original round tender on him at the end of next year, and that should be enough to keep him, you know, unless he just blows up. Brown's a different story, of course, but even with him, he's going to have to put up another 1,000-yard-plus season. He's going to add a few more touchdowns than he has had over his time, but even that at best should take a first-round tender on him. And hey, you know, there may be a situation where he needs to wear the franchise tag. I kind of doubt it sitting where we're at right now with the unknowns of what Todd Haley is going to bring to the offense and how all this is going to work and all. But, you know, there's no reason to worry with the unique situation that we have with Wallace and the cap situation this year. I have no doubts that Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders are, you know, it's not going to be a fear with them next year at this same time. Because when you look at both the scheduled restricted free agents next year versus the unrestricted free agents, you know, only Rashard Mendenhall is the only one that jumps out as an unrestricted type, and he's going to be down for half the season anyway. He's not going to be worth wearing the franchise tag. And as far as your restricted guys go, the only one that jumps outside of Brown and Sanders is Isaac Redman. But we know how fungible running backs are in this league. I mean, it would take a 2,000-yard Jamal Lewis-type season to even throw Isaac Redman in the talk of him having to wear the franchise tag, you know, after this season. I think a first-round tender, he very well could be headed for that, and that certainly should be enough to keep him as well. So I wanted to alleviate, you know, a lot of the fears this morning as far as that goes.
Yep, and that's something we've talked about. And, again, I'll point us back again to the Tuesday podcast talking about Mike Wallace because we got into the whole receiver situation. And, Dave, I'll just throw it out there for you for fun one more time. If you knew you had to decide today that only one of Antonio Brown or Mike Wallace could be on your roster in the 2013 season, which one would you choose today?
That's a good – so I have to choose between Brown and Wallace?
Yep.
Going to hurt a lot of people's feelings, but I'm going to take Antonio Brown there. He's really – I consider him the more complete receiver right now, especially the fall off that Wallace had last year with Wallace and him liking to catch that ball into his body and not with his hands. And, you know, some people, I think even somebody kind of asked in my Twitter feed, you know, is this guy still a one-trick pony? Yeah, he's not 100% a one-trick pony, no. I mean, he has shown us some bright spots, especially early in the season last year. There's really just no, you know, outside of the accuracy problems with Ben Roethlisberger and that foot and all, you know, there are really no explanations kind of that drop-off in the second part of the season, especially when Antonio Brown was alleviating a lot of the pressure put on him there. So gun to my head, and that's a great question to ask. I think right now I would take Antonio Brown if I forced to make a choice.
I'm generally with you on that. Let me ask you another question because I think this is going to be maybe even more illustrative in your answer. We've talked about the difficulty Mike Wallace had in the second half of the season, and you and I have talked about it a lot in the offseason, and I've been pretty critical, and you just made an interesting choice there, and I think I would lean with you. Let me ask you the second part of that question. To reach their ultimate personal ceiling, who has more room for development today, Mike Wallace or Antonio Brown?
More room for development. Wow. Man, this is not a cop-out. I think they both are about equal in that standpoint. I mean, let's look at Wallace. He's been in the league 3 years, and Brown's in the league 2 years. They both have their recognition problems at times with blitz recognition and knowing, you know, when to check out into something, into a different route. Both of them, you know, have ways to have room for improvement for route running as well, too. as far as that goes. So, I mean, it's going to sound like a cop-out, but I think that's pretty much even Steven as far as that goes.
Yeah, I generally agree with you there. I think Wallace, I think Antonio Brown has shown better hands. So I think Mike Wallace probably has more room for improvement there. I think Wallace is pretty, is probably a little closer having a year in the league. I think he's probably a little ahead of Brown on running routes and stuff, but that doesn't mean that his potential to run him is better. I'm with you. I think they both, you know, as good as they both were and both making the Pro Bowl, these guys are not playing at their ceiling. I mean, you look at a guy, and this is, please do not take this as a knock on a guy like Wes Welker, but you look at a guy like Wes Welker who's making, he is unbelievably good. You know, when you're a guy who's not as fast and not as big, you've got to get the most of your talents to be, you know, an all pro, not just a Pro Bowl, an all pro receiver, which Wes Welker is, one of the two or three best in the game. And you look like a guy like, you look at a guy like Megatron, and I would say some of the same things. I might even say it about Larry Fitzgerald. Those guys, all three of those guys have really kind of, they're just really refined their craft and their physical skills to be the best they can be. And you know, you look at guys like Wallace and Brown, and they really do have room to get better.
And, you know, add on top of this, not only catching the football, you know, and running routes, the blocking aspect of it too. Mike Wallace does not, you're not going to confuse his blocking skills with that of Hines Ward. He'd much rather shy away from a block than he would put a body. We saw some instances of him willing to last year, but it wasn't where he needs to be. Antonio Brown really made some strides in that area, more so than Mike Wallace did last year. In my opinion, he still has a ways to go. Neither one of them are to the level of what Emmanuel Sanders can do. So, you know, you've got three different guys there that all have unique talents. And they make a good group going forward, and they do have a lot of room for improvement. 5 or 6 years from now, if both these guys remain with the Steelers, which I think is going to happen, there could be multiple Pro Bowls and all pros for these guys, you know, heading forward, you know, as long as they're able to keep everything together on offense and they stay away from injuries. So it is encouraging, because I don't think you've touched scratched the tip of the iceberg on either two of these guys, or Sanders for that matter.
Yeah, I'm with you. Good stuff. Really good stuff, Dave. Well, listen, we're running along here, and we've really hit this one topic. Let's just touch on a few other things. One is, you know, we still have the media. And you know, I don't want to point a finger necessarily at Haley or Ben, but it is a daily topic of conversation that they have yet to talk about things. Ben gets asked the question. Again, I'll defend Ben in the sense that if you're asked the question, he's answering the question. Others have criticized him for not diffusing the whole situation and saying, you know, there's no, you know, we can't even have a mandatory meeting until, you know, mid-April or whatever the exact date was. Anything you want to throw into that stew?
I still stand by the article I wrote, over a week ago, the Steel City stare down and how it's got to stop. Somebody's got to make a move here, and don't hand me that stuff about the CBA and the dates and all like that. Roethlisberger can pick up the phone, walk in there and say, hey, I want, you know, let's sit down for 5 or 10 minutes to introduce myself. Let's see what direction that you want to go there. I know Haley's busy with film work. You know, getting ready to go to the combine and all like that. But come on, I mean, we're talking about 15 minutes here, and all, you know, let's get this thing done. And I think it's going to be a story until it's not a story.
Yep. It certainly could be a story in the Pittsburgh paper. So they'll keep tapping away at that. Dave, let's get into, just for a couple minutes before we wrap things up. Tomorrow is the start of a big week. For a lot of young men, certainly for the 32 NFL teams, and certainly for guys like you, me, and the other football crazies who follow the combine, the NFL Network has really changed how a fan can approach the combine by televising a lot of this stuff. It's a chance for us to really kind of get to know some of the guys who are on people's radar and get a look at them, watch them, maybe hear from some of them. Why don't you just give our listeners a couple minute overview of really in broad strokes how the combine works, who's going to be there, and then how you're going to spend your week.
Well, the combine is basically a giant phys ed class, if you will, and people are aware of this now probably by watching the NFL Network coverage. You're going to get 40 times on these guys. You're going to get all their measurables. You're going to send them through complete medical type situations, make sure there's nothing hitting out there as far as that goes. They're going to lift. They're going to bench 225 pounds, see how many times they can do that. They're going to run the short shuttle, the long shuttle if they so choose. They're going to broad jump. They're going to vertical leap and all like that. And basically, as I think the great Gil Brandt said, you know, they needed a place to get all these guys together from a you know, a standpoint to keep it responsible money wise, trying to get them all in one place to get these reports done, and to get all these measurements and weights and all like that done, and thus the combine was born. And out of that, you know, that they're going to do position drills, and it just gives a one stop shop for everybody to come in one place and get a good look at an athlete. Now, you know, people say, well, how much does the combine count into this, the whole process and all? It does count a fair bit. Now, you'll have some of your top-tier guys that you know, if they don't run well or don't leap well or don't do certain part of the combine well, they'll actually, you know, they'll have their pro day on top of it, where they'll get to improve on that if they choose to partake with that. Another good thing that Kevin Colbert laid out yesterday on Steelers Live, live at 4 yesterday on Steelers.com, was, you know, they get to meet, team officials get to meet with 60 players at the NFL Combine for 15 minutes at a time, and they'll pack them all in a room. You know, the Steelers will have Joe Green, all their scouts there, Tomlin, and all like that, and they'll get to talk to these kids for 15 minutes, and Colbert basically reiterated how much really you can find out about a kid in 15 minutes as far as that goes. So that's a broad brush kind of stroke of what happens at the Combine. I think it's useful. Some people just think it's people running around in shorts and not pads on. I think it has a useful aspect. Now, as far as guys that I'll personally want, you know, be interested to kind of look up that close, of course, David DeCastro, the guard out of Stanford, which the Steelers right now have really, it would really take a trade up or something unique for him to fall down to 24 right there. Also interested in seeing Cordy Glenn, the guard out of Georgia, who could very well be on the board when the Steelers pick in the first round, who I have as my first pick in my first mock draft I had prior to the combine. Also interested to see Kalichi Osemele out of Iowa State, another guard the Steelers could have interest in as well. Another guy that there's some talk in certain areas of Steeler Nation is Peter Kontz, the center out of Wisconsin. This guy can play both, can project as a guard at the next level as well, too, and could be a first-round talent that could surprise a lot of people and play the left guard or the right guard position if deemed necessary there. So as far as linemen goes, that's who I'm looking at. Of course, we all know the pending need on a defensive line with nose tackle goes and all like that. Don Terry Poe, we really haven't seen anything because, of course, this kid's a junior, was not at the Senior Bowl. I really am excited about seeing him up close and personal at the combine, as well as Alameda Taamahu out of Washington, another young good nose tackle who I had the Steelers in my mock taking as well. Not to be left out is also maybe, you know, Jarrell Worthy, the kid out of Michigan State. When you look at the linebackers, especially the inside linebacker position, this Nick Colucci out of Boston College is a guy that I think is going to really just blow it off the chart at the combine and really solidify himself as a mid-first-round draft pick. Then you have Dante Hightower. I want to see where he comes in at his weight, the kid out of Alabama, inside linebacker. I want to see all his measurables as well. Another kid that I have my eye on is James Michael Johnson, inside linebacker out of Nevada as well. Now, those are your top-tier names that I'm looking at. I'll have all the measurables up as soon as I get them in, minute-by-minute updates on SteelersDepot.com, starting when these guys start running their 40s, and it'll start with the offensive linemen, I believe. So those are just a few of the names that I'll have my eyes on heading forward into this long week.
Great stuff. And what is generally the NFL Network coverage is pretty much wall-to-wall for the next week, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, David. And it starts early in the morning on into about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. The good thing is if you have the computer, and I assume they're still going to do this, is before the network even comes on the air every morning, you can tune in live to NFL.com and see some of the early groups run and do their stuff and all like that as well too. So it literally is, I mean, I do not sleep for a full week whatsoever, and I'm tied to the computer and tied to this combine coverage for a complete week. And to me, I mean, it's the second best thing other than the NFL draft in the offseason.
Fantastic stuff. To all our listeners, we've been getting tons of questions here. We've been getting them on Twitter, at Terrible Podcast. I want to thank Natron85, Trevor916, Diamond Fox. We've gotten some good stuff.
Yeah, I told her we'd give her a shout-out. Diamond Fox, she's the world's hottest MILF, okay? If you don't understand that or if you're offended like that, get over it, okay? It is what it is. She's been a longtime supporter of both Steelers Depot and the Terrible Podcast. I'm going to give her website a plug, DiamondFox3X's.com. So she's on Twitter, too, at DiamondFox3X's. Give her a shout-out and tell her you heard her on the Terrible Podcast, or heard her shout-out on the Terrible Podcast as well, too. We have had a lot of response on Twitter. We apologize. This ran a little bit long again today, but I think we answered a lot of the questions there as well. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow David at Hammer Speaks. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com as well. We're on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to us and listen to us as well. Make sure you catch David on his work on ESPN 970 this week as well.
Yeah, and a couple other guys that just give shout out to through his questions. Scott Young, Uncle Andy Bob, Sam underscore SHJ, The Real Brian C, Steeler Nation 97, LRG Bull, some great stuff, Kits Tracks, all these guys. Appreciate all the questions. We got a lot of stuff to cover here in the offseason. Hopefully we're between Dave's work and my work, we're educating you, bringing it up to speed in terms of what's going on with the cap. Dave's done a really fantastic job there, and he is all over this this combine stuff. So he's the lead sled dog here, and I'm following along. But it's good stuff, and thanks for all the feedback. And we'll get back to you again on Tuesday of next week. We'll have a lot of combine stuff. I'm sure we'll have more information coming out of the Steelers in terms of how they're approaching the cap. So we'll talk to you again. And again, Dave will be on with me 11:30 tomorrow. Some of this stuff will be repetitive, but we'll touch on any of the latest news and get through some of this cap stuff if we didn't make it clear enough the first time. So thanks again for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.